the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. I'd like to record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. Present today are Senator Stedman, Senator Egan, Senator Bishop, Senators McKinnon and Hoffman are excused as we're doing double duty on the operating budget taking public testimony. I'd like to recognize staff for today's hearing. Oh, here is Senator Hoffman. He made a liar out of me, but that's good. He's here, present. Christopher Dickrell from Senate Records and our very own Sam Greeley is our teleconference moderator. Committee staff to Senator Bishop are John Manley and Brittany Hutchison. You know the cell phone drill. Today's meeting we're to discuss and hear for the first time SB 87 municipality taxes on deteriorated property by Edra Mortledge, Senator Meyer's staff. The senator's going to try to make it, but again, we're all doubled up here this week. So, okay. So, Edra, the also online, we for questions, we have Gabe Lehman and Tyler Robinson from Cook Inlet Housing Authority to explain any details that Ms. Mortledge might need to defer to, and please introduce the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Edra Mortledge, staff to Senator Meyer. My intention is to give a general overview of the bill and the three things, the three main things that it does, and then defer specifics and details about how it works, how it will work practically for communities and for developers to Gabe Lehman with Cook Inlet Housing Authority. So I will start by saying that this is a community development bill and an economic development bill. And what it will do is allow municipalities to further incentivize the rehabilitation, demolition, and redevelopment of blighted properties in deteriorated communities. Currently, Alaska statute allows municipalities to offer optional property tax incentives that are intended to encourage redevelopment of deteriorated properties. The municipality must pass an ordinance and adhere to specific application procedures as outlined in the statute. Under the current law, a municipality may offer this optional tax for redevelopment if one of the two following conditions are met. One, if the property is a commercial property not used for residential purposes, or two, if the property is a multi-unit residential property with at least 8 residential units. So what this bill will do is provide 3 amendments to the current statute.
I'd like to recognize Senator Myers here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So the first change, well, it's actually third as you go through the statute, but I'd like to mention it first because it's more of a technical change. It fixes the omission of the word not in the commercial property section, and I can go through that in a little bit more detail. Second, it amends the residential property rehabilitation section by clarifying that the 8-unit requirement can either be at the time of application for tax exemption or deferral or at the completion of the project. And third, SB 87 amends the statute to clarify that when a single entity owns multiple residential properties within one designated deteriorated area, those properties can be considered collectively to satisfy the statute's 8-unit minimum. Again, the municipality still has to pass an ordinance to offer any of these optional incentives, and the developer would still have to go through the proper application process, and it must ultimately be approved by the municipality. These changes add clarity and greater flexibility for municipalities to craft incentives for larger redevelopment projects that meet their specific goals. And I can walk you through where the changes occur in the bill. They're all on the second page if you'd like me to do that.
Thank you. Please continue. Okay.
Okay, so the first change is our lines 11 and 12. That clarifies that the deferral can be at the same time of application or at the completion of the project. Right now, the current statute does not clearly state at which point the 8 residential unit requirement can be met, and so there's some ambiguity in the current statute. Lines 13 through 17 clarify that a single entity that owns multiple properties within one designated deteriorated area, they can be considered collectively to satisfy the 8-unit requirement. And finally, line 26, this is the technical amendment to insert the word not after has. And the reason for this is that the way that it currently reads is you would be eligible for the tax exemption or deferral if a commercial property has a structure on it that's over 15 years of age that has undergone substantial rehabilitation, renovation, demolition, removal, or replacement, which doesn't necessarily make sense for a developer who wants to go in and redevelop an area. The statute would actually specifically prohibit that if it was less than 15 years of age.
So the not gives direction.
Yes. That is correct. So those are all the changes to the bill. And Gabe Lehman would be online to describe more effectively of how this actually benefits the redevelopment of these deteriorated properties.
Thank you. Questions from committee members?
On page in the packet, there's a document. Technical amendments to AS 2945, pictures of some properties.
Yes.
The one with the blue Costco tarp.
Trying to find it, I'm sorry.
Okay. Back. You don't mean any disrespect to Senator Stedman in his secondary home, do you? I mean, I have one that looks a lot like that. I think I have 3 Costco tarps. They think I'm joking.
Okay. Right
before that.
Make
it
close. Here.
No.
Not that one?
No. It's got to be further back. Here, just
use that. Okay. We'll share.
I'm just teasing. Oh, I do have a place that looks a lot like that.
Well, if I got a legitimate question.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, we could fix up Senator Stedman's home with this bill.
We might have to. Ms. Morledge, I have a question. If you can't answer it, just we'll pass it off. We got Gabe Lehman and online, and Bryant Robbins, he's the municipal assessor, online for questions. But anyway, my question is, what's the significance of the 8 properties?
Through the chair, Edward Moynledge, that's a good question, and I did try to do some research on that, and I was not able to find the exact reason why that was first put into statute. But the general consensus with some of the developers I spoke to was that it was to incentivize larger redevelopment projects, mm-hmm. so that a single homeowner couldn't come apply for the exemption, so that you didn't have a lot of single homeowners coming and applying for the exemption. It would be targeted towards actual larger areas and for multiple units to house more people.
Okay, thank you. I have a follow-up question. This would probably be, is Mr. Robbins online? Bryant Robbins, are you online, sir, for questions?
Yes, I am. This is Bryant Robbins.
I'm going to direct this one to you. How's the designated deteriorated area defined?
That is defined by the assembly, and in Anchorage Municipal Code, there's a set of criteria that the Assembly looks at in determining whether an area qualifies.
Okay. So you've got benchmark parameters now on a deteriorated property, and if a developer would have to bring and make their case before the assembly for approval? Is that how that works, sir?
The application process is to the CFO of the municipality. In Anchorage Municipal Code, in 1235.010, kind of outlines what's required of the application process. Typically, the CFO sends an application to our division for review, and then we work with the CFO in determining whether or not the application meets the criteria. If the CFO approves the application, it then goes to the mayor, and then the mayor forwards it to the assembly.
Okay, thank you.
If the CFO determines that the application doesn't qualify, then the applicant has the right to appeal directly to the assembly.
Okay, great. Thank you. Further questions from committee members? Okay. At this time, I think we have Gabe from Lehman from Cook Inlet Regional Housing Authority online to testify. And Paul Poos is also in the audience to testify.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for arriving late. I do appreciate you hearing this bill. It's a very important bill to my community. Cook Inlet Housing and other groups have been known to target deteriorated areas, fix them up really nice, and then other development occurs around there, so that overall the city benefits in the sense that the property tax that they get goes up because the whole value of the neighborhoods go up. So, and also provides additional housing for low income folks. So,
yeah, and you're very spot on, Senator Meyer. My former life, I worked with Cook Inlet Regional on some job training out there in the Commons on when they built a new shopping mall out there, and I know they're doing good work there in Anchorage to bring up the value of the real estate. So thank you for those comments. Also, we have Paul Fasoli. I'd like to go online and get our online person first. Gabe, if you're up and ready to testify, please carry forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon regarding SB 87. So my name is Gabe Lehman. I am the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for Cook Inlet Housing Authority. We're one of 14 regional housing authorities that deliver safe and affordable housing to low-income Alaskan seniors, families, and individuals. Our service area covers the entire Cook Inlet region. We promote homeownership through lending programs, but we also develop, own, and manage more than 1,200 rental units from Soldovia all the way up through the Matsu Valley. SB 87 is legislation that could have some very positive statewide impacts, but to make clear what SB 87 does and does not do, I'm going to use Anchorage as an example. So as you all know, there are communities within Anchorage that experience blight, disinvestment, and deterioration. Historic neighborhoods like Fairview and Spinard have this tremendous potential for redevelopment, but some portions of those communities are private sector kryptonite. Contaminated former gas stations, drug houses that have been seized by law enforcement, and properties with large blighted structures that are really costly to demolish because they were built with hazardous materials. Market conditions, federal, state, and local regulation all make it very expensive to acquire and redevelop properties like these. For that reason, we've seen very little private sector redevelopment of blighted properties virtually anywhere in Alaska. And so long as the worst of the worst properties in these communities remain untouched, the sickly shadows they cast are going to continue to discourage this investment in all properties that are located nearby. So presently, there are very few tools that are available to encourage private investors to take on the risk that is associated with the redevelopment of deteriorated properties. One tool that does exist, at least in theory, is this state statute that gives municipalities the option of offering property tax incentives for the rehabilitation or redevelopment of deteriorated properties. The applicable civil statute creates an optional tool that allows municipalities to encourage redevelopment in their most blighted areas. And really the vision here was that municipalities would employ this tool to encourage private investment, to promote economic development, and ultimately to increase their municipal tax bases. Unfortunately, that vision hasn't been realized. I'm aware of only two communities that have opted in by adopting an ordinance that authorizes optional property tax incentives for the redevelopment of deteriorated property. And those two are the municipality of Anchorage and the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I'm not aware of any projects in Fairbanks that have benefited from this provision, and to my knowledge, only three or four in Anchorage have. The question is really, why isn't this tool being used? Developers would like to use it, and in Anchorage at least, the municipality has been willing to make it available. Unfortunately, the authorizing statute is confusing and in some ways overly restrictive. This bill, SB 87, would really clarify the statute and make improvements that would enhance its usefulness. So before I dive into some of the details and explain what the implications of these changes are, I do want to emphasize what the current law and SB 87 do not do. Neither the existing statute nor SB 87 requires municipalities to provide tax incentives of any kind. Municipalities must, by ordinance, opt in if they want to offer this tool to developers. And further, once a municipality opts in, it retains the ability to evaluate project applications on a case-by-case basis. So as Edward made clear for you, really this bill would make three significant improvements to the current statute. The first is that the statute presently provides that a residential property has to be, may be eligible for property tax abatement from a municipality if it is, quote, a multi-unit residential property with at least 8 residential units. And as Edra said, really what's unclear here is the point in time at which the property has to have those 8 residential units to qualify. The language is ambiguous and it's confused both municipal officials and developers. SB 87 clarifies that this requirement could be satisfied either at the time of application for exemption or deferral, or at the time of project completion. So why does that matter? And the answer is, it really makes it clear that for purposes of the statute, that the purposes of the statute, which are to authorize locally determined efforts to eliminate blight and redevelop deteriorated properties, could be satisfied in multiple ways. A developer could seek property tax incentives for a project that would turn, say, 2 blighted units into 8 new quality homes. Or a developer could seek property tax incentives for a project that would remove 8 blighted units in an overly dense neighborhood and replace them with 2 or 4 new high-quality homes. The second change that SB 87 would make is that it would amend the authorizing statute to clarify that an entity could apply for property tax incentives when it owns multiple residential properties, collectively having 8 or more units, all within a single deteriorated area. This amendment is intended to encourage developers to revitalize deteriorated areas by acquiring multiple properties and redeveloping them in a coordinated manner. So for example, if a developer owns a number of small properties in a deteriorated area, for example, a number of 8,000 square foot single family residential lots in Fairview. Those parcels themselves are not currently eligible for municipal property tax incentives because they can't each independently support 8 or more units. And this remains true even if the development as a whole would impact a substantial number of properties and produce dozens of housing units. We need to find a way to fix that. And that's exactly what SB 87 would do. So then third and finally, SB 87 makes this technical amendment to the current statute to fix the omission of this single but very important word, not. The statute currently states that commercial property is eligible if it has a structure on it not less than 15 years of age that has undergone substantial rehabilitation, renovation, demolition, removal, or replacement. Inserting the word not after the word has ensures that the statute isn't inadvertently encouraging the redevelopment of commercial properties that have been improved within the past 15 years. And while it seems like a small thing, in actuality, this minor technical issue alone is currently an impediment to the redevelopment of Anchorage's historic 4th Avenue Theater by an extremely interested and very capable private developer. So with that, again, I just want to thank the members of the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time today. I'd also like to recognize Senator Meyer and Edra for their hard work on this bill. If passed, SB 87 is going to promote economic development and further empower municipalities to address blight and deterioration in a locally controlled manner. And better yet, it isn't going to cost the state a dime. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was a very good overview. And if you have those talking points, if you could submit them to the committee or get them to Edra, we could roll them out to my committee members. We do have two committee members that are short here today because we're doing double duty, and that was a great explanation, and I'd just like to put that in the package and for my two missing committee members. Paul, any questions for Mr. Lehman? And if not, I'll have Paul Foos come up to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Paul Foos, representing the Fairview Business Association. And a lot of this came up because we went to the assembly and we proposed an area in Fairview, and it was adopted as a deteriorated property area. Later, as we worked with developers, you know, we said, well, look, the intent is pretty clear here, is to put in multifamily housing to replace old deteriorated properties or contaminated properties. But the way that it's written, it isn't clear. Do we really qualify? And it's a state statute that is unclear. And because of that, we couldn't clear it up in the local ordinance either. So this language just clarifies that in a common sense way that says what you want is the net effect is that you're going to put in these units and in an anchorage that meets the 2020 comprehensive plan, and housing is a big issue there, which is another reason why the assembly did it. Now, previously, we only had, like, individual projects. I'd come for a deteriorated property project, and it just became really controversial. And what we did is by designating an area, and I think it's the first area, it is assumed that everything in that area is deteriorated. So you don't have to go through a bunch of hoops with the CFO, and we defined it by, you know, declining property values, abandoned properties, and a whole list of criteria of what deteriorated was. And the assembly made a finding that area is deteriorated. So if we can get this clarified in law, it's really going to help us. When a developer goes to the bank, they say, well, I kind of see what the intent, but are you really meeting the law here? Is someone going to come pull a rug out from underneath when you go ahead and start building this project? So that's the reason why we did it. It also allows for when they require a lot of infrastructure to put in, I'm putting a new building in, and the city has no money to upgrade the infrastructure. Well, now's my time. I'm going to make you put a 36-inch line rather than a 24-inch line that maybe somebody else wants to use it. We'll have you make a new road there. We'll put in new drain fields. We'll put in the drainage system for the entire block. Well, that's municipal infrastructure. That has nothing to do with the property owner. So, yes, under this, the developer will pay it, but they get to write it off against their property taxes, and that's fair. The other thing that's important about this is that you always pay the assessed value of the property as it was. This is not a tax holiday on the entire project. What it's a abatement of is a value above and beyond of the new assessed value. So you'll always pay what you're paying now, and then you'll have until you write off your investment or your infrastructure, you don't pay property taxes. But as soon as that's paid off, you pay a full assessment. So when Tacoma did this, it resulted Tacoma, Washington, 2,500 new units, about $48 million in new construction. And in the end, the city ended up $6 million ahead in new assessed value. That's another reason why the municipality did it. So there's a lot of good logic behind this, and some other communities, I think, could take advantage of it. But because of this gray area on the housing side, which this bill clears up, we need this to happen for the final steps to take place.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions from committee? I'd just like to add the Tacoma analogy. $6 million direct dollars to the tax base to the city, but that doesn't count the $43 million of construction wages that were spread out through the city during the construction time. Any other Senator Egan?
I'm just curious, so get me right, so like Juneau's done, so when you do the improvements and then you write them off, the municipality owns those utilities or...
That's exactly correct.
Okay.
Yeah, this is not the individual hookup, it's when they make you upgrade the whole...
So you do those improvements to municipal code?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And this is what the municipal planning department tells you you have to do.
Right. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Cruz? Hearing none, I see no one else for public comment, so we're going to close public comment. Anything else from the committee? Senator Meyer, if there's one good thing I learned from you, 2 years sitting with you having the gavel up there in finance, I've learned not to pass a bill out the same day, and I'm going to make sure that my other two committee members are fully up to speed. We're going to schedule this bill for next Tuesday, and it all appearances, I think it's a good bill, and I am familiar with that Fourth Avenue Theater issue there in Anchorage, if that's the right word, and hopefully this will help make that become a reality in other properties in Anchorage as well. With that, any other things to come before the committee? Hearing none, I'm going to adjourn, and it is 3:55.